In our nation today, we have still the continuing menace of a comparatively small number of people who honestly believe in their superior right to influence and direct government, who are unable to see or unwilling to admit that the practices by which they maintain their privileges are harmful to the body politic. After Jefferson's election in 1800, an election over their violent opposition, such people came to him and said, "Let us alone. Do not destroy confidence." After Jackson had won his fight against the Bank of the United States, they said the same thing. They said it to Lincoln. They said it to Theodore Roosevelt. And they said it to Wilson. Strangely enough, although they had no confidence in a people's government, they demanded that a people's government have confidence in them. In my message to the Congress on Monday last, I made it abundantly clear that this administration seeks to serve the needs and to make effective the will of the overwhelming majority of our citizens, and seeks to curb only abuses of power and privilege by small minorities. Thus, we, in turn, are striving to uphold the integrity of the morals of our democracy. There is an ancient strategy, recently used, whereby those who would exploit or dominate a people seek to delude their victims into fighting their battles for them. And in these days of organized nationwide publicity, the strategy for undermining a government move against minority abuses is to make this appear to be an attack upon the exploited majority itself. Thus, during the past few months, attacks on the misuse of concentrated power have been distorted into attacks upon all business, big and little, and upon our whole system of private profit and private enterprise. During the past few days, I have been happy to note a definite improvement of understanding on the part of many who had been led to follow this false guidance. I was interested the other day to read the report of a correspondent of a London financial magazine who had recently surveyed conditions in our Middle West and other parts of the nation. He found a point of view in other parts of the country wholly different from that of the principal financial centers, such as New York and Philadelphia and Chicago. And he found this other interesting development. Wherever an enterprise is controlled locally, its managers have a local, independent point of view. But when the business is controlled from great financial centers, the local manager takes his cue from what his bosses are saying hundreds of miles away. That opinion from an outsider confirms our traditional democratic antagonism to concentration of control over large areas of industry beyond the needs of operating efficiency and it strengthens our resolve to outlaw the methods by which such control is achieved and to reestablish the independence of local and regional enterprise. Let me give you an example. As you know, I have been discussing the problem of the electric utilities, discussing the problem with businessmen and lawyers and public officials during the past month or so. I am convinced that the great majority of local or regional operating utility companies can come to an understanding with the government, federal and state and local, and with the people of the territories which they serve. That would enable them and will enable them to obtain within their own localities or regions all of the new capital necessary for the extension or improvement of their services. But most of these operating companies are owned by distant holding companies, pyramided holding companies, which are finance companies and not operating companies. Very few investors in this country of ours who invested in the operating companies have lost their money. But thousands of investors have lost their money in buying holding company securities, which had blue sky above them instead of tangible assets behind them. That evil of utility holding company control is not going to grow in the days to come, because this government of ours has now passed laws to prevent similar occurrences in the future. But we have not yet corrected the existing evils that flow from mistakes of prior administrations. And we cannot condone their continuance. It has been estimated, I think fairly accurately, that there are outstanding some $13 billion worth of electric utility securities, and that the substantial control of this total is vested in the hands of the owners of less than 600 millions of the total. That means that the ownership of about 4% of the securities controls the other 96%. There, my friends, is the case of a 96-inch dog being wagged by a 4-inch tail. And inches, it's an amazing dog. But think of the power in that 4 inches. I have I have recently described other things that cannot be reduced to terms of natural history. Other activities which nevertheless ought not to be tolerated in our democracy. Price rigging, unfair competition directed against the little man, and monopolistic practices of all kinds. Call them evils, call them abuses, call them unfortunate facts. It makes no difference to me. Give to me and give to your government the credit for a definite intention to eradicate them. Give to me and give to your government the credit for believing that in so doing, we are helping and not hurting the overwhelming majority of businessmen and industrialists throughout the United States. And we hope and believe that these evils and abuses and unfortunate accidents will in greater part be eliminated by the cooperative action of that overwhelming majority. The White House door is open. I'm forgetting about that famous key just now. The White House door is open to all our citizens who come offering to help eradicate the evils that flow from undue concentration of economic power or unfair business practices, who offer to do all that is possible by cooperative endeavor and to aid in corrective and helpful legislation where that is necessary. We know that there will be a few, a mere handful, of the total of businessmen and bankers and industrialists who will fight to the last ditch to retain such autocratic controls over the industry and the finances of the country as they now possess. With this handful, it is going to be a fight. A cheerful fight on my part, but a fight in which there will be no compromise with evil, no let-up until the inevitable day of victory. Once more, the head of the nation is working with all his might and main to restore and to uphold the integrity of the morals of democracy, our heritage from the long line of national leadership, from Jefferson to Wilson, and preeminently from old Andrew Jackson himself.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard the President of the United States deliver his annual Jackson Day address before a large gathering of Democratic Party leaders in the Hotel Mayflower in Washington. Jackson Day, for the third time, has been commemorated not by this single dinner in the nation's capital, but by simultaneous dinners in every section of the country. The President now shaking hands, bidding goodbye to the Vice President, the Speaker, and others. No, he's decided that he's going to stay for a few moments. May we tell you that this broadcast has come to you from New York and Washington through the National Broadcasting Company.